The following is a lecture entitled Stress Management Through Spirituality, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on November 22, 2014, in Texas, USA.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatha Pada Kamala Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvitam Tamsajivam Sadaitam Savadudam Bharijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Badan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakan Vitamsha Namaom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschak Yadeshatarine. So, I've been asked to speak something about stress management through spirituality. So, on the one hand there's spirituality, and the other is materiality. In other words, there's two dimensions. There's the spiritual dimension and there's the material dimension. In our modern day society, we are given a unidimensional vision of reality. We understand only one dimension of reality. And the result is stress, actually a lot of stress. Because we actually want to live forever. Our nature is we want to live forever. We don't want to get sick, we don't want to get old, we don't want to die, but yet in the material dimension these things are forced upon us unwillingly. We're being dragged to old age, disease and death unwillingly. This is stress. This is an underlying stress. What to speak of the other stresses of my job, so many other things we worry about, but the underlying stress beneath it all is being dragged to old age, disease and death. So as long as one continues to have a unidimensional vision of reality, he must necessarily be stressful. He must be. But if one develops a bidimensional vision of reality, he understands that just like the body has two hands, it has two eyes, two nostrils, you see. Reality has two dimensions. It's not a unidimensional reality, it's a bidimensional reality. So as soon as you develop that bidimensional vision of reality, then you're connected with a platform of stresslessness. You see, there's stressfulness, and which is the position of one who has only a unidimensional vision of reality. And there's stresslessness, which is the vision of someone who has a bidimensional vision of reality. So, religion is supposed to be taking us to that platform of spirituality, but religion, unfortunately, has been perverted. It's like now in the ISIS, you see. in the name of religion, they're committing the most abominable sinful activities. Religion has been perverted. They've made religion into something material. They've forgotten that the real meaning of religion is to bring one to the platform of spirituality. So this is the great knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is not presenting a religion. It is possessing the pure essence of all religions, which is spirituality. To realize the bi-dimensional vision of reality. Okay, this material body is here, granted, but I have an identity beyond this material body. Krishna explained this in chapter 2. Dehi nosmin yata dehe kumarang jovanam jara tata dehantara paptir dirastata namuhyati. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at the time of death. The self-realized souls are not bewildered by such a change. So what is this self-realized soul? The Sanskrit word used by Krishna is dhira, you see. There's two calibers of beings. There's dhira and adhira. The dhira, you see, he is the undisturbed person. He has the bi-dimensional vision of reality. And the adhira, you see, one who is not peaceful, he has the unidimensional vision of reality. So the reality is, if you analyze it thoughtfully, scientifically, the reality is you have a sense of identity that you've carried with you throughout your entire life. In other words, you feel you're the same person that you were when you were born X number of years ago. Even though your body is different, the chemicals are all different, you have a sense of identity with that little baby that was born on, you know, such and such day in such and such hospital, you see. So your identity, your sense of identity is actually beyond that material body. In Sanskrit it's called Atma, you see. Your understanding of who you actually are intuitively is beyond your body. That's why when a loved one dies, we say, oh, he passed away. The body is lying there in the funeral home, and everyone is crying, he's passed away, he's gone, you see. So it's very easy to see that the self and the body are two things when somebody dies. But yet in our everyday, day-to-day life, we keep thinking, I'm this body, this is me. I'm an American, I'm male, I'm female, I'm Indian, I'm Gujarati, I'm Punjabi, I'm this and that, you see. We continue to identify ourselves with this body, and that is the cause of all the stress that we actually experience in life. So if one comes to the Brahman platform, Brahmabhuta prasannatmanasochati nakankshati, of understanding that I'm not this body, then you become ecstatic, you become joyful. You find your happiness on the spiritual platform. A lot of people say, well, there's no such thing as a spiritual platform. There's no such thing as God. It's just, everything comes out of nothing. That's what the scientists say now, that everything comes out of nothing. But I ask you, is that science or is that dogma? Science means you can do it, you can back it up with an experimental evidence. So show me the experiment where you can take nothing and get something out of it. But yet the scientists are telling us that everything comes out of nothing. And that we're nothing but robots. We're not really people. We're just machines. That's what the scientists are telling us now. We're just machines. We're not really people. We're not really persons. We appear to be persons. But actually we're not. We're just some bunch of chemicals. Just a bunch of chemicals, you know, going through reactions. That's all it is. There's not really any people there. So it's ridiculous. It's a blind faith dogma that everything comes out of nothing. But let them give one experiment that you can take something out of nothing, and then we may take them seriously. Until then, we understand that something comes out of something. You get one thing, like this chair I'm sitting on, it comes out of a tree. This arm of the chair comes out of a tree, you see, which came out of its seed, another tree. So we see that things come out of other things that came out of other things. So somewhere there's an original source for existence, you see. You can call that God or the Supreme. In Sanskrit, it's called Adi, the origin. And it is said Adi Purusham. That origin is actually a person. Actually, the origin must be a person, and I'll prove it to you. If you have a... if there's a mine from which you're extracting so much gold every day, does the mine have gold in it? Sure. It has to have gold in it. Otherwise, you can't extract gold from a goldless gold mine. So many persons are coming out of the original source, the existential mine of existence. You see, so many persons, I'm a person, you're a person. We all know we can feel, we understand we're a person. You can understand we're dealing with another person. We know them. So we are persons, we come out of an existential mind, and therefore that existential mind must possess personality, otherwise how it can produce personality, personalities. So, if something possesses personality, is it an it, or is it a person? It's a person, not an it. So the origin is a person. And in the Bhagavad, the Vedas tell us this. Krishna says, I am that origin. Aham sarvasya prabhava matak sarvam pravartate. I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So, what is the foundation of happiness? What really makes you happy? Is it money? Is it a nice house? Is it a nice car? No, it's love. What actually satisfies us is loving relationships. You see? Even my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, he saw some beggar couple in India. They live very poor lives, some little piece of canvas on the side of the road. But he saw the wife was serving the husband very devotedly, and they had a happy family life. Even though they were living in great poverty because of that loving relationship, even though they're beggars, they had a happy life because of that loving relationship. So the real foundation of happiness is to have loving relationships. So the Bhagavad Gita teaches us that if we can have a loving relationship with that original person, that is the perfection of love. It's compared in this way by my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. If you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches are nourished. So if you can love that person who is the root of all existence, then your love goes to everyone perfectly. It goes to your wife, your husband, your kids, your family members, your neighbors, your boss. It goes to all living beings, even the tree out in your backyard, you see. That once you, when you perfect the art of giving your love to the Supreme, then your love goes everywhere. So there's many types of yoga systems. Yoga means the process of self-realization, to link yourself with the divine consciousness. That is yoga. There's hatha yoga through asanas, through pranayama, you see. There's jnana yoga through philosophical speculation. There's different types of yogas. But Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 6, text number 47, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatena tadatmana śradavan bhajate yo mam samayutatamo mataha. And of all yogis, the one who worships me with devotion is the most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all the yogis. So if one is interested in the self-realization, interested in becoming an enlightened being, this bhakti yoga system, which is the whole point of the Bhagavad Gita, is a very, very practical system. It doesn't require you have to go live in the Himalayas, to live in like a yogi in some cave somewhere. Like the Kumbh Mela, they come down. You know, there are yogis 300 years old who come down from Kumbh Mela from the Himalayas. 300-year-old yogis. You go to Kumbh Mela, you can actually see yogis 300 years old. They're doing the breathing, the asanas. They slow down their metabolism through this yoga, and they live for centuries. But that process takes many lifetimes to become perfect. But this bhakti yoga system is very simple. This is what Arjuna did, you see. He was a working man. He was a professional man, you see. He had a very big responsibility in the royal family. Very responsible man with a professional career as a warrior, you see. He wasn't some renunciate sitting around meditating. He was a hard-working man, you see. So he didn't give up that work. He continued to be a hard-working professional career man. But he offered that in the service of Krishna. That, my dear Lord, now I will do this for you. You want me to do this? All right, I will do it for you. So in this way, in the bhakti yoga system, by dovetailing your consciousness with that Supreme Person, by connecting yourself with that Supreme Person in a loving relationship, you actually fully become situated in the bi-dimensional vision of reality. As you take very good care of your body and your bodily needs, you take care of them properly. The bodily needs of your family members, you take care of everything very properly. But at the same time, you understand the higher nature that continues after the demise of this material body. So, how does one attain that state of divine consciousness then? That's why we're doing this chanting process, is the actual means of how to achieve that state. This is what is recommended by Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, satatam kirtayanto mam yatantashta dridhavrataha. He says, always chanting my glories. He's recommending. Satatam means always. Kirtayanto means chanting, and mam about me. You see. So by chanting the holy names of God, you see, one can actually connect with that Supreme Person. One can actually connect himself on that transcendental platform beyond all the anxieties of material existence. This is not a sectarian thing. A Krishna can chant the name of Christ. A Buddhist can chant the name of Buddha. A Muslim can chant the name of Allah. You see, it is a science. It's a scientific principle. It is not a sect of religion. This is spirituality, pure spirituality. You see. In all the scriptures, it is recommended in this age to chant the names of God. The Quran, the Bible, the Vedas, they all say the same thing. To vibrate the holy names of God. And this principle was taught in a very profound way 500 years ago by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is the avatar of Krishna who appears in the Kali Yuga in a disguised form. He traveled all over India chanting and dancing Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, in line of his wonderful teaching, we have our movement, the Hare Krishna movement. It's not a new invention, it's an ancient movement. But it's now become, as far as being worldwide, that's a new innovation. By the great profound potency and of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, whose books are over here. We encourage everyone to take a book when you go home. This will be a great, the greatest blessing your family ever had. In fact, one man, he bought a set of these books. And he came back and he told the devotees, you know, my house burned down, but the books weren't touched. The whole house burned down, but the books weren't touched by the fire. So these books have mystic potency. Not that your house will burn down if you buy the books, we're not saying that. Our house also caught on fire, but, and the books weren't hurt. The same thing happened to us. They weren't hurt at all. So these books have very special potency. And if you take a book home, actually anyone who takes a book tonight, I'll give you a special written blessing in your book. So the real thing is we desire to be free of anxieties. That's our natural position. We all want to be free of anxiety. But as long as we continue to live as if I am simply this body and that's all there is to me, my family members are just their bodies and that's all there is to them, you see, as long as we live in that kind of a mood, you can't avoid being in anxiety. It's impossible. Because we want to live forever, but this body is mortal. The actual self is immortal, but the body is mortal. So as long as you continue to identify with I'm a male, I'm a female, I'm an American, I'm an Indian, you are putting yourself into stress unnecessarily. So don't put yourself into stress. Affirm that I am not this body, you see. I'm an eternal spiritual being. According to my karma, I've gotten this particular body, so let me utilize it in such a way that this is my last lifetime in the material world. Krishna says this in the Gita. He says, from the highest planet in this material world down to the lowest, all their places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, punar janma navidyate, he never takes birth again. So, if one can take instructions from a bona fide spiritual master who represents Krishna perfectly, under his good instructions, under his merciful guidance, if you will follow his teachings, this bona fide spiritual master will train you how this will be your last lifetime in the material world. That's what my spiritual dad did for me. He rescued me from the cycle of birth and death. So now in the Hare Krishna movement, we're prepared to do the same for you. You see, you want to be delivered from the cycle of birth and death? We can do that. You want to be absolutely stress-free in all circumstances? We can take you to that position of consciousness. We can teach you, we can guide you how to achieve that state of complete spiritual perfection, pure happiness, without compromising your material life. Actually, your material life will get better. Because as long as we're stressful about what's going to happen at the end, we can't function to our full capacity, even in the material world. But when you understand your true spiritual identity and you become completely, you realize, hey, I'm death-proof. I'm immortal, you know, I'm deathless. Nothing, death can't touch me. And then you act fearlessly in this world to accomplish great things in your family life, in your social life, in your community life, you see. Political, any sphere of activity you enter into, political life, any sphere you want to enter into, if you realize your spiritual identity is the eternal servant of God, and you mold your life according to the instructions given to you by the bona fide spiritual master, then you become a very powerful hero, actually, and to accomplish great things that benefits yourself, your family members, and the whole human society in the best possible way. So this formula for stresslessness is very powerful. It's very effective. It's worth millions of dollars, but we're not charging you one paisa for this knowledge. My spiritual master didn't charge me anything. So I'm not going to charge you anything either. I'll give it to you absolutely free. That which is more valuable than all the wealth of this whole material world, we're giving it absolutely free. But there's one price you have to pay. Shraddha, or faith. If you want to actually get the benefit of these teachings, you have to put your faith in what I'm teaching you. You see, I'm not teaching you, it's not my teachings. I'm teaching you the science of Bhagavad Gita, science of Krishna. If you put your faith in the teachings of Krishna, which guided the Indian civilization for thousands and millions of years, all the great sages, the rishis, the yogis throughout the history, they all had faith in the Bhagavad Gita and they followed the Bhagavad Gita, you see. The greatness of India is there. Bhagavad Gita is the greatness of India in one simple book. So if you put your faith in the Bhagavad Gita as taught by a bona fide spiritual master, because that's what Krishna says. He says you have to learn this from the bona fide spiritual master. Tadvidi patipattena pare prashnena sevaya upadekshantite jnanam ganinas tatvadarshina. Right there in chapter 4, in text number 34, he says you must learn this truth from the spiritual master. Because this is not ordinary knowledge like 1 plus 1 equals 2. This is transcendental knowledge. So to realize transcendental knowledge, you have to learn it from a realized transcendentalist. You can't figure it out by mental speculation. You have to hear it from a realized devotee of the Lord, a self-realized spiritual master. So when you hear it from a self-realized spiritual master, there's great power and great potency. And that actually unlocks your consciousness. You see, our consciousness is locked up right now within the three modes of material nature, sattva-gun, rajagun, tamagun. Sattva-gun is the mode of goodness, rajagun is the mode of passion, tamagun is the mode of ignorance. So right now, our consciousness is locked up, we're tied up. The Sanskrit word is gunas. Modes, it's called gunas. The word guna has a dual meaning. It means modes, it also means ropes. So we're tied up tightly in these ropes, these gunas, passion, goodness, and ignorance. And because of it, we're not able to realize transcendental knowledge. But the spiritual master has a very sharp sword of transcendental knowledge which cuts through these modes, you see. By hearing submissively from the bona fide spiritual master, those words have a very powerful, sharp effect to cut through the modes of material nature that are binding the consciousness and bring one to the transcendental platform of transcendental knowledge. So the key for becoming free from stress is to connect yourself with your true identity on the stressless spiritual platform. And that will give you unlimited happiness and satisfaction. So, I can ask now if there's some questions. Anyone have any questions?
According to a survey, 40% of the people in the United States, they claim their stress in their life is coming from their work.
They do what?
The stress in their life comes from their workplace.
Life?
The stress in their life comes from their workplace.
The what of their life?
Stress in the life comes from the workplace.
Yeah, confronting the workplace.
What about
that? They're coming from
the
India
job.
And they're engaged in the workplace, so the stress is coming from that.
Oh, the stress is from the workplace, yeah. Okay. So, all right, only 40%?
That's for the survey.
Yeah. So what is the question?
So the question is, how to deal with that? I mean, how?
How to deal with it? You have to, how to get free from the stress of the workplace. That's what you're asking. Yeah. The first thing is you have to understand that you're not really being maintained by your job. You see, we think we depend on that job for our livelihood. That's why we're in stress. Oh, if I get laid off, how am I going to survive? You know, there's all this anxiety. Oh, if I get laid off. But you have to understand, God is actually providing everything for you. Eko bahunam nitcho nitchanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam yo vidadati kama. There is one supreme conscious eternal, and he is providing all the necessities. The elephant, he eats much more than you do, and he's not in anxiety about losing his job. You see, Prabhupada explains very, very nicely this point. You see, the animals are not worried about losing their jobs. They're not anxiety about their careers. They eat, sleep, mate, and defend. Whatever is there, they just do it. They don't have to go to a psychiatrist, you see. But the human being, you see, has greater intelligence than animals. Therefore, the human being should be living more comfortably, more stress-free than the animals. But actually, the human beings are more stressed out than the animals. That's a fact. That's a fact. Because we're in ignorance of our spiritual identities, and we're ignorant of the fact that God is maintaining us at every minute. If you put your complete faith in Krishna or God, that He will never let me, as long as I'm devoted to Him, He will absolutely never let me starve. He will always take care of me. If you have that faith, then, you know, if I lose this job, will Krishna give me something better? And I have nothing to worry about. He'll never let me starve. But as long as you pin your idea of security and peacefulness on your relationship with that company, you're going to be in stress. Krishna is the one who provides, not your company. Do you eat money? Do you take a... have salad of, you know, $100 bill salad? You don't eat money. All the necessities of life are given by God. They're not given by the Texas government. You're working for the Texas government. Yeah. The Texas government is not they don't manufacture food. God is manufacturing the food. Every single necessity of life that you're utilizing right now, it's all given by God. Every bit of it. He can easily maintain you. In fact, when you took birth in this world, the Lord made sure there was enough for your maintenance here. Personally, the Lord has already seen to your maintenance for your whole life and your family as well. It's already covered. It's already arranged. Every time a baby takes birth, the Lord arranges that baby will have everything he needs for his whole life. It's already prearranged. So why be in anxiety? You see? No reason. Yes, sir.
So, adding to that, why people are poor and why people have just owned everything in their own and the rest of them are suffering?
Why people are poor?
Why are people poor?
Yeah. And the reason we do see starvation and poverty in the world is not due to a lack of the necessities. It's due to the mismanagement of the governments. It's due to exploitation. There is ample supplies to feed everybody sufficiently, but due to mismanagement by the governments, we see there's so many people in difficulty. Some greedy people will hoard, you see. Like Gandhiji, he said, there's enough for everybody's need, but not enough for everybody's greed. And greed is the problem. The necessities are there for everyone, but some people are taking their unfair share. And therefore, some people are suffering. That's a fact. So we have to train people how not to be greedy. That's one of the missions of our Krishna consciousness movement. We want to teach people. You see, they're thinking, the more I can lord it over this material world, I'll become happy. But that doesn't work. The more you put your faith in God, instead of your faith in greed or your faith in money, that is your happiness. So the poverty problem is simply due to the greedy people who are taking more than their share. That's all. There's plenty for everybody. There's plenty of food. Just like I remember, I saw in the newspaper one time, there was a huge crop of oranges, a bumper crop in Southern California. So instead of putting them on the market and the price going way down, they just let them rot. There was mountains of beautiful oranges. They could have driven across the border to Mexico and fed the people there who were in more impoverished condition. But no, they just let them rot. Huge mountains of oranges, they just let them rot. So this is due to mismanagement. The governments are not... We have very much improper governments in the world. They're not God-conscious. These governments are not God... This is like the European Union. Look in their founding documents and see if there's anything about God in the founding documents of the European Union. Absolutely nothing about God. Nothing. You see, that's the modern tendency in government, get God out of it, get God away, you see. So therefore there's so much suffering due to lack of God consciousness, not a lack of resources. Yeah.
It also depends on what the person has prepared himself according to his karma also. Prabhupada says that one can afford a good apartment.
One individually, it's based on karma. If I was very sinful, if I was a very sinful person who exploited people, my previous lifetime, then I took advantage of people, a greedy person who exploited others and didn't care about their poverty, then I'll become a impoverished person this lifetime. You see, and there's also that aspect, karma is there. Yeah.
Can day-to-day stress be actually used for growing our spiritual?
Growing spiritually. Yeah. Yes. This is the art of bhakti. Instead of being bewildered by stress, you use it as a springboard or a stepping stone to advance yourself on the pathway of self-realization. We see this example. There's a great devotee of the Lord, Kunti Devi. She was from the palace. I mean, she was used to living a comfortable palace life. But then her sons were sent into exile by this big gambling match of Duryodhana and company. And they were living in the forest. There were man-eating demons. It was horrible. No comfortable bed to sleep on, no room, just living in the forest with man-eating rakshasas. And they were almost burned to death in a palace of shellac. So many anxieties she went through with her sons, the Pandavas. But when the whole thing was finished, and now she's back in the palace, and Krishna is there, and now he's getting ready to leave Hastinapur, going back to Dwarka. And she says, Krishna, Pipada Shantushantashatatatata Jagangaru, Bhavanam Darshanam Yashat Aparamana Darshanam. She says, my dear Lord Krishna, I want more calamities. Give me more calamities. Because when the calamities come, then I can do nothing but see you and be absorbed in thinking of you. And I know when I'm absorbed in thinking of you, I will not see birth and death anymore. So, one who is a little trained up in the science of bhakti, he doesn't become disturbed by distress. He says, this is great. This is a chance for me to go deeper into my relationship with God and realize this material world is not my real home. Another example is a businessman. a very successful businessman, the market can be a bear market, or a bull market. Doesn't matter for him. When the prices go up, he sells. When the prices go down, he buys. So every day, his business is growing. Doesn't matter up or a down market. Doesn't matter to him. He just keeps growing his business, becoming a little richer every day. Another day, another dollar, you see. So one who is trained up properly by a bona fide spiritual master, he learns how to do the same thing spiritually. Whether happiness comes or distress comes, he uses either one of them as a way to move himself forward spiritually. Another example is sailing. How many of you ever sailed in a sailboat? Yeah. You can sail into the wind, can't you? That's, for a layman, that's hard to understand. You know, I used to think, well, you know, if you want to go from point A to point B and the wind is blowing towards you, how would you ever get out of the harbor? But actually, the laws of physics, it's amazing, you can actually sail into the wind. So stress, using stress to advance is like sailing into the wind, you see. The wind can be blowing the direction you want to go, it can be blowing the opposite direction, but still you can get to where you want to go. So one who is trained, devotee of the Lord, working under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, he is advancing himself in all conditions of stress, happiness, success, failure, honor and dishonor, heat and cold. Krishna says, Matrishvashishta kondaya shitoshna sukadugada agamapayanondinjashtangtishashvabharata. The non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of the winter and summer seasons. One must learn to tolerate them, O scion of Bharata, without being disturbed. So it's a fact you can use those things to advance yourself. You see, and never become bewildered by any situation. That way you become a great conqueror over the material nature. Any other questions? Yeah?
You mentioned how everyone who identifies with this mortal body must become stressful.
Yeah.
It's a fear of death.
Right.
At the same time, there's a great problem in societies all over the world with suicide.
Yeah.
So why do people do that?
Someone who commits suicide, they're very much in the mode of ignorance. They're so frustrated and miserable, they just want to end their misery, but they don't realize the karma of suicide will make them even more miserable in their next life. In other words, they wanted to destroy their gross body by suicide. Do you know there's a type of being that doesn't have a gross body? He's called a ghost. He has a subtle body, he doesn't have a gross body. People who commit suicide, they become ghosts in their next life. It's a very hellish nightmare to be a ghost. So it's the most foolish thing they can do, to commit suicide.
Is it the next life?
Most foolish thing.
Is it the next life or the same life, because they have not completed their term?
No, it's the next life. It's considered the next life. They finish that gross life. Their gross body is finished. Their next life, they are ghost. And they must suffer as a ghost for a long, long time. And finally, they have a chance for another gross body again. Yeah. It's a very sad thing. Someone commits suicide. There's no reason to commit suicide. You see, if you realize you're not your body, you can, sometimes it said sannyas is civil suicide. You deny all the relationships of the material world and just say, my only relationship with God. But they don't commit suicide, they just cut off all their identities. So if you're not happy with your identity, it's simple. You can philosophically negate it. Just like now people want to switch genders also. I really hate being a guy. I want to be a girl. So, you know, I'll do some surgery, take some hormones. But that's not the solution. We understand you're not happy thinking I'm a male, because actually you're not a male. You're a spiritual being. You're not that male or female body. So changing genders to give, you know, doesn't really satisfy you because you're still in the material consciousness. So being unhappy with your identity and wanting to either change genders or commit suicide, you see, it's ignorant of the fact, ignorance of the fact that you're actually not, you have nothing to do with that body. That body which you feel your source of misery, it's not even you. It's just a garment. It's like now you're wearing a white shirt, tomorrow you're wearing a green shirt. Your body is simply a garment that you're wearing right now, that's all. So as long as you identify with a garment, if I told you, if I trained you in your whole life, you know, I gave you a red shirt, I made you wear it every day, and I told you, you are a red shirt. That is you. You see? And then something came along and your red shirt got ripped or got a bunch of blue ink all over it, you might be in great anxiety because you thought that was you. You see? That's how we're trained. We're trying to think I'm this body. The body is just a garment. It's not you. You are not that body. It's just a garment. So if one who identifies with his body, he's going to be in anxiety. So killing your body is not the solution. Just kill your identification with the body through transcendental knowledge. I'm not the body. I'm a spiritual being. Now you've annihilated your false identification with the body. So killing the body is not the solution. Going through a gender change is not the solution. The solution is to understand I'm not this body. I'm the eternal servant of Krishna or God, you see. That is liberation. And that will free them from their anxiety. But the psychiatrists don't teach this. The government doesn't teach this. They keep people in illusion and they exploit them. We want to put a stop to this. We want enlightened government leaders. We want enlightened college professors. We want enlightened school teachers. Enlightened movies coming out of Hollywood and Bollywood that elevate the consciousness, not degrade the consciousness like they're doing now. Any other questions? Time is up? Okay. So now we're going to the next part of the program. Prasadam. And, okay. Anybody, and when are they can get books now?
Yes, they can.
And anybody wants to get a book, there's just I recommend especially Bhagavad Gita. You can give a donation, some suggested donation to cover the printing costs. We're not really selling them, but we have to recover the printing cost. So anybody who takes a book, you can bring it up here and I'll give you a written blessing in your book. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.